This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. A new week dawns. It's Monday, August 6, 2018. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. There is rain in the forecast, a severe thunderstorm later this afternoon. 75 degrees right now at O'Hare, 72 at the lakefront.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village, Bedford Park. It took a couple of hours, but the sluggish stock market finally got going. Let's get the latest in the numbers from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob and Chris, and we have all three of the averages now up, with the Dow advancing 72 points, or 0.25%, NASDAQ higher by more than 0.5%, or 44 points, S&P up 12. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index also gaining about 0.5%. Tyson's earnings news is giving investors something to sink their teeth into. Profits at the largest U.S. meat company were better than expected in the spring, and shares of Tyson up more than 3%. Investors washing it down with a Pepsi. Indra Nooyi, Pepsi's CEO of 12 years, is preparing to leave that role in October. Nooyi tells Bloomberg that being a CEO requires strong legs. She feels like she ran two legs of a relay race. Pepsi up almost 2%. And the end of Toys R Us generated a lot of sympathy and sales for the toy industry. The NPD Group says toy sales grew by 7% in the first half of the year to almost $8 billion. NPD says it's likely the Toys R Us store closings brought on an emotional response that resulted in parents buying more toys. And crude oil futures up 1.5% to $69.50. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
And we're going to be looking at the markets, of course, during today's Noon Business Hour. Also, the economy with Diane Swonk, and how Warren Buffett has really scored in the past few months.
And then in the second half hour, if your kids come into a large amount of money, how do you get them on the right track financially? All that and more coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway makes a major comeback in the second quarter, and we're going to be covering that in our next segment. But right now, the week ahead will feature more talk on trade, plus reports on consumer and producer prices and the economy. We are joined by Diane Swonk, who's chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. How are you seeing the economy at large right now, Diane?
But the economy is pretty robust right now. We saw the employment numbers on Friday, although they did slow. They slowed mostly because of that Toys R Us bankruptcy and the closing of those Toys R Us stores. Once we took that out, we actually saw, with upward revisions the previous 2 months, very solid and strong job gains. The only disappointment has been, of course, where are the wages? We still keep waiting for raises. We're generating a lot of paychecks and more jobs, but not a lot of increases in those paychecks.
And there, of course, is always a debate if and when the healthy economy slows down. Are we ripe for a recession anytime soon?
Well, hopefully not. We could have some long legs to this expansion. It's a marathon. But the problem is we're doing a bit of a sprint right now with fiscal stimulus, and that has costs and consequences down the road. Everything from tax cuts to increases in spending, opening the government spigot, means that we get growth today, but at the expense of growth later on. The other concern, of course, is tariffs and how that will work its way through the economy, how much we actually see, how long they last, and how big they are with retaliation as well. That's something that certainly is escalated recently with China, and China's already facing some problems. It's the second largest economy in the world, and so the spillover effects from that are where we worry about some of the headwinds out there. Finally, I'm a little concerned about housing. Housing is sort of the canary in the coal mine. And although the demand for housing has been outstripping supply, we're starting to see that demand soften a bit as foreigners pull out of some of the major markets. Now, hopefully, that opens the door for some millennials who want to buy, because foreigners have been pushing up prices much more rapidly than most people can afford. So we'll see how that plays out, but that's something to watch.
Midterm election day, which seemed like a distant point in time not too long ago, is actually right around the corner. And there is some commentary about potentially moving some money around or moving investments around in anticipation of Democratic gains in the House and Senate. What's your take on that? Is it too early to start reallocating funds based on expected political events?
I think it's certainly taught us well that expected political events don't always have expected market reactions. And so it's not clear at all what will actually happen after the elections. And so, you know, many people expected that we'd see a bear market after the presidential election. And in fact, it went the other direction. So I think it's very, you have to be very cautious about playing this political handicapping game, especially when you've got other issues going on, things that are much more important, like tariffs and things like that. So we need to really think of the whole economy, not just one event. And as we found out with Brexit, it was a vote, not an action. It's now having an impact, but 2 years later.
Why are wages not coming up, especially when we've been seeing that there have been lots of jobs given out?
That is the billion-dollar question. There's a cornucopia of reasons for it, the most notable of which is that workers have lost bargaining power relative to owners of capital. That's sort of an overarching theme, and there's many ways that's happened. But also we're starting to see many employers that are had one job and they can't fill it with a high-skilled worker, and so they're dividing it up into parts and making more lower-skilled jobs. Now, that's more jobs, but in the aggregate wage data, those lower paid jobs for one higher paid job makes it look like wages aren't accelerating as much as well. And so that may be some of the problem is now right now, which is less of a problem and just more of a reaction to the shortage of skilled workers.
And then you read some commentary that says that whatever wage gains have taken place over the last year and a half or so are being eaten up by a little bit of inflation. Are you seeing that too?
Absolutely. Once you adjust wages for inflation, we actually are down relative to a year ago. And some of that is upward pressure on prices at the pump, which had come off and now could go back up again. But I think the real issue is we're also starting to see much more broad-based inflation in service sector. That's where you should see it. You get an extra boost to inflation if we were to see these tariffs go on Chinese goods, some $200 billion in Chinese goods coming in. That hits the consumer right at their heart, particularly those consumers who can afford at least, because it hits the discounters, the big box discounters that are the biggest buyers of Chinese goods.
So the Fed has got to be fairly stealthy as it figures out what to do, because you don't want to throw the country into a recession, you know, working around with the numbers there.
Exactly. So right now what we do is we have enough growth and inflation is close enough to the Fed's target to justify further normalization. This year we could move from interest rates being benign and sort of just normalizing, lifting your foot off the gas, to a point of sort of beginning to tap the brakes. And that's where the Fed's not exactly sure where that occurs, so that makes it all the more difficult. I think we are going to have two more rate hikes this year. I think the economy is strong enough for that, and it's a reflection of economic strength. But it really is a conundrum for the Fed when you don't have as many wage gains as you'd like at the same time that inflation is picking up for external factors, things like tariffs and things like that. So it makes it much more difficult for the Federal Reserve. Then you add upward pressure on rates from deficits and debt down the road, and that it just gets much more complicated.
And very quickly, going back to the question of should you start allocating resources ahead of anticipated Democratic takeover, at least one House of Congress, I mean, there's a number of hurdles there. I mean, there's the lesson we learned from 2016 where the polls could be wrong. You can't anticipate outcomes once they happen. But listening to what's coming out of Democratic politicians, that maybe the party may be lurching leftward on certain economic issues, can you at least do a little bit on the margins in anticipation of some sort of switch over in one House of Congress in November?
Well, right now we've got a president that wants to control markets and determine winners and losers, and you may have more of a Congress that wants to do that as well, although I think we've seen already the Republicans have also stepped up and chosen winners and losers with the tax reforms and how they were implemented. So it's just not an easy call. And if I was an investment advisor and I really did know the future that well, of course, I'd own my own island where no hurricanes could hit it, but I don't.
Well, thank you very much, Diane Swank, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based in Chicago. Coming up, Berkshire Hathaway scores big in the second quarter.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Berkshire Hathaway rebounds in the second quarter with Warren Buffett's company reporting net earnings of $12 billion. Let's take a closer look with Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management and author of the book Even Buffett Isn't Perfect, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, welcome back to the program. The premise, Even Buffett Isn't Perfect, nobody's perfect, but he's got plenty of reasons to smile these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This earnings report was very good. It's a little deceiving, though, when you say $12 billion in earnings, because much of that comes from mark-to-market actions from investments. So that's a very volatile component. It's much more important to focus on the operating earnings, but that also was outstanding. That was about $6.9 billion. So the company's businesses are doing well. When you look at their operating businesses, you know, insurance, underwriting, railroads, all their other businesses, they've all done extremely well year over year.
Now, when you look at the list of Berkshire Holdings, it's really an all-star team. Apple, of course, America's first trillion-dollar company, Coca-Cola, Wells Fargo, American Express. But some of the companies that Berkshire Hathaway owns a piece of can also serve as a bellwether of the economy as a whole. For example, Berkshire owns a big piece of the BNSF Railway. And if trains are full and moving cargo across the country, that's probably good for the economy as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good sign of economic activity. Now, you know, you pointed out a lot of the companies that Berkshire owns, you know, owns stock in. You know, one thing I'd like to point out is that Warren Buffett has a history of buying companies that pay good dividends. Ironically, however, Berkshire Hathaway pays no dividends itself. And right now, there's a lot of speculation as to what Berkshire might do with all the cash. It has a tremendous amount of cash. And just a couple of weeks ago, the board of directors eliminated a requirement that the company could not do a share buyback unless the share price was within 20% of the book value. So they eliminated that requirement. So now there's a lot of speculation that the company may actually do a buyback, even though currently the share price is about 40% above book value. So as long as Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger believe that the stock is undervalued, in other words, that it's selling for less than its intrinsic value, they have the green light from the board of directors to do a share buyback. So everybody's speculating that that might be coming up.
Is Buffett putting money into other tech companies besides Apple?
Well, you know, he did have a very big position fairly recently in IBM. And then I guess he lost patience with IBM, which is a little unusual for him because he tends to be a very long-term buy-and-hold investor. But eventually he lost patience with IBM. He didn't own the stock for very long compared to many of his other investments, and he eliminated it. Now, of course, you could say that IBM is really an old tech company. It's not a new tech company like Apple. But Apple is clearly a very big holding, and they actually added to the position during the quarter.
Vahan, thanks for joining us today. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management and author of the book Even Buffett Isn't Perfect, and he's in Greenwich, Connecticut. Still ahead, how to handle a young person's financial windfall.
WBBM News Time, 1225, WBBM Business, sponsored by Normandy Remodeling. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, the Dow right now up 44 points. We're at 25,507. NASDAQ gaining 46 points and the S&P up 11. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is winning the session as well, up 0.5%. And crude oil futures higher by 1.25% to $69.36 a barrel. Now we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here. Corn's been up 2 to down 2 at the moment. We have December up 3/4 at 385. Beans have been down 14 after being up 1. We're presently down 9 in the Novembers at 8.93 1/4. And wheat's been up as much as 17. We still have wheat up at 571.75, up 15.5. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55. Live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are higher today. We'll see what's encouraging Wall Street.
It is Stock Picker Monday. We'll have a couple of ideas from an investment pro.
Every parent wants to see their kids do well, but how can you help when they hit a financial jackpot?
Mayor Emanuel and Police Superintendent Johnson say communities need to step forward after an exceptionally violent weekend in Chicago.
President Trump reimposes sanctions on Iran, saying U.S. policy is to levy maximum economic pressure on the country.
And on the AccuWeather forecast this afternoon, we could have some severe thunderstorms later on. Watch for that. A high temperature of 86. It's 75 right now at O'Hare.
Markets, the Dow is up 33 points, the S&P 500 up 10, and the NASDAQ is up 43. The Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Stocks are gaining today. We are joined by Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Heartland & Company in New York. Jim, thanks for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Does this continue to be a trend on Wall Street?
Yes, I would cite three factors today for the improved stock prices, and all of them are likely to continue. The first is that you had a recalculation of earnings results so far, with 80% of the S&P reporting earnings, and it looks like they were up 24%. So that's a further upgrade, and analysts are expecting, while at a slower rate of gain, additional increases in the third and fourth quarter. So earnings is the most powerful story. Secondly, Goldman Sachs came out with an analysis of the amount of corporate buybacks that are likely to occur over coming months, and they're really quite substantial, which should be supportive of stock prices. And finally, the ability of Facebook to rally as a result of news that it may enter a joint venture with banks and a new product offering is giving hope to growth investors who were somewhat battered over recent weeks by Facebook, Twitter, and a couple of other companies. So put all of that together, and you've got interest rates behaving themselves. The 10-year back down from below 2.95%, and that's an ingredient for continued stock price increases as long as we aren't hit by some sort of external dislocation.
It's interesting. Jamie Dimon said people should prepare for yields of 5%.
Yeah, and I have a tremendous respect for Jamie. I happen to personally know him for many years, and I would not dismiss when a guy that smart comes out with that provocative a statement. But right now, investors are investing based on the here and now, what they see here and now. If it ever became apparent or obvious that you were going to race to 4% and then 5%, that would be damaging to financial conditions, the economy, and stock prices. But for the moment, people are treating Jamie's forecast with respect, but sort of a show-me basis.
And then let's talk about the changes at PepsiCo, their CEO stepping down after 12 years. And you definitely would say that she's done a good job of shepherding the company through a rather tumultuous period in not only in the economy, but also in the beverage space.
Yeah, she's done a very good job in a difficult environment for that kind of company selling those kind of products. She's done very well in snacks. She's done well in international beverages and lags somewhat in domestic beverages, but is taking action, has been taking action to improve that. And basically their earnings have not disappointed. And the stock price is up a fair amount during her tenure, less than the S&P and Coke, but up a fair amount. And she's probably of the attitude, it's a tough industry, I might as well quit while I'm ahead and let somebody younger take the reins from here. But I don't think it's of tremendous import to the corporate strategy or future stock price of Pepsi.
So Indra Nooyi has been presiding over this company since October of 2006. You think PepsiCo, you immediately think Pepsi. You think about soft drinks. But what are some of the areas in which PepsiCo is involved that the general public or investors may not really know about?
Well, the most important is the snack business. which has been growing very nicely, outpacing the soft drink business. And then, of course, within the beverage category, Pepsi, along with Coke and anybody else, has been moving towards non-soda products as the consumer population is moving towards more healthy and non-soda drinks. And so that was an important change. It's an ongoing change in the face of a cola market that has not been growing.
What's your advice to investors right now?
Well, I would say that all bull markets end, and this one will end, and all good economies end, and this one will end. But so far, as far out as you can see, as long as the economy is able to grow, interest rates stay tame, and corporations report growing earnings, stock prices have further to go. But remember, it's late in the cycle. This has been going on for 10 years, with that kind of, you've got to respect the age of the cycle, and therefore stick with quality in terms of both bonds and equities, particularly on the bond side. I think it's there's been so much debt issuance over the last 10 years. You probably want to tighten up, stay short, and increase your quality on the bond side.
However, asking the question of when will this end, in some ways, it's almost like waiting for Godot. I mean, me personally, yeah. I've been on this program for 2 years, and there have been a number of predictions about this cycle coming to an end, and yet here we are, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight.
Yeah, you're still all the cylinders. I mean, you know, housing has become a little bit of a drag, but consumer spending, capital spending, the ingredients are there for continued growth. I would say what could change that is if the trade war escalates to the downside in a dangerous way. If Jamie is right, and all of a sudden you get a rapid tightening in financial conditions, if you had political turmoil based on the investigations going on in Washington, any of those factors could change consumer and business psychology, which would impact business profits and stock prices. But those you got to watch those. But you can't invest based on black swans. You keep your eye out for black swans and be attentive to them. But based on everything you can see now, the skies are relatively clear. But again, respect the age of the cycle and don't downgrade in terms of quality.
We always enjoy having you on the program. Thanks, Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Heartland and Company in New York. And up next, how to lend a hand should your child reap a financial windfall.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Keeping finances in order is a challenge for adults, but how can you help when your child finds themselves with a major stack of cash? Let's talk about it with Tony Orgorek, who is the founder of Orgorek Wealth Management based in Buffalo. Tony, welcome back to the program. Now, this is a sum of money above and beyond the proceeds that you get as a kid from, say, a lemonade stand or mowing lawns or working as a caddy at a golf course. And we're talking about thousands of dollars. In this situation, you know, what is more likely to happen? Is it just you get a large sum of money from a deceased relative, or you find some sort of success in entertainment? What is the most likely scenario in which a child winds up with a big chunk of cash?
Sure, Rob. It may be an inheritance. It may be sort of a child star who is, doing some sort of a gig. And, is paid, a significant amount per hour. Generally, those are going to be the two forms it's going to take.
And if you're a parent, one's thoughts immediately turn to, okay, you've received $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, into the college fund it goes. Are there different or better uses for it?
Yeah, I guess what I would do is write these three numbers down. 60-30-10, okay? So 60% I would put into a college fund, which would be your 529 account. One of the nice advantages of that is that when you look for financial aid down the road, it's only going to count about 5 or 6% of the asset toward your contribution. If, however, you put it into a uniform gifts to minors account or uniform trust to minors account, it's going to count about 35% toward college. So you don't want to do that. Put it in the 529. Just for 60% of the money. 30, I want you to look at retirement. This you'd have to have earned income. So someone would actually, this would not appeal, apply with an inheritance. But if you're actually earning money, you put 30% of it into a Roth IRA. You don't get any tax benefit going in, but it's tax deferred and tax free when you take it out. And then finally, 10%, the poor kid's working. You know, you may want to say, look, 10% of it you can spend for yourself, but 90% is being put away for the future.
Rather than wait until you die, are you seeing more grandparents giving a gift maybe once a year to the grandchild and put that away and it will grow for you?
Well, interestingly, Chris, you know, if a grandparent, you know, is well-heeled and they'd want to do some estate planning, what they can do if they have, for instance, a newborn, they can gift $75,000 into a 529 plan, and that covers their $15,000 of annual gift over a period of 5 years. So if they wanted to get some money quickly out of their estate, or if they wanted to instantly, you know, create a college fund that the parents are probably not going to have to contribute to in the future, that's one great way to do something for the kids.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. Tony Ogorek, who is the founder of Ogorek Wealth Management, based in Buffalo, New York. And join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, which is sponsored by Geiger Wealth. And joining us with some suggestions this afternoon is Ken Crawford, who is the portfolio manager at Argent Capital in Clayton, Missouri. Welcome to the program, Ken. The first one, you want to do what many Americans do on over the weekend, and you want to make a target run, but you want to go to the stock.
That's right. We like Target. We like it. We don't expect that it's going to be Amazon anytime soon, but one of the things that Target is doing is trying to get next mile logistics. So if you order something, they'll give you daily delivery to your home, and we like that change.
And let's move over to e-commerce technology, a First Data Corporation. What do you see there?
Well, they're the leader in payroll or credit card processing. And the last couple of years, they've improved their client service tremendously, and they have a new technology platform called Clover that really seems to be doing well for them. So they trade at a discount relative to their peers, and we're hopeful that they narrow that discount in the next year or so.
And the symbol for First Data Corporation is FDC, and then for Target is TGT. Not too long ago, Target had some difficulties. They had layoffs. They closed stores. How'd they turn themselves around?
Well, I think they're kind of in the midst of turning, so I don't think it's complete yet. But I think one of the things that's happening across kind of bricks and mortar retail is that we shoppers are actually going back to stores, so that is helping them. And again, they are trying to narrow the difference between them and Amazon by providing logistics to their customers.
Well, thank you very much for the recommendations on this Stock Picker Monday. Ken Crawford, portfolio manager at Argent Capital in Clayton, Missouri. His picks once again, Target, TGT, and First Data Corporation, FDC. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a look at the markets. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris, the Dow is up now just 10 points, and the S&P's gains have been cut as well. The composite is gaining 33 points, and the S&P up 8. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by a third of a percent. SeaWorld saw its park attendance grow in recent months, and that was thanks in parts to new rides and free beer promotions. The stock's having its best day since 2013, and before the documentary, Blackfish criticized the treatments of animals in SeaWorld's care. with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.